just want to confirm, Geoff is how you say your name.
Just Jeff.
Jeff. Right. Why have I it's spelled Geoff though. It was a really good name, by the way. So I was like, Geoff's a great name.
Americans call me Geoff.
Yeah.
So
basically, I was going to call you Geoff too.
A simple Jeff.
Simple Jeff.
On the number. Yeah. Just a simple
Jeff.
Jeff.
Your parents love you so much to spell it different.
I mean, they've called me Jeff, haven't they?
Yeah, so, I know, but it's spelled Geoff. It's like the French version of Jeff. Some people are just called Jeff, J-E-F-F.
J-E-F-F, yeah.
Yeah, that's boring.
It's more of like an American thing, I think.
Geoff.
But Jeff, Geoff, Jeff. My parents didn't love me, for the record. Yeah.
They didn't, or did?
No, not at all.
Not at all? Oh.
They called me Jeff.
Yeah, fair. Well, my name's Hannah. It's like the most basic name. You spell it backwards, do you know what I mean?
A palindrome.
Yeah, but I don't even know what that word means, but I know it means the same thing.
Yeah, no.
For my next episode of Managed, we have the incredible Jeff Griffith. He's an ex-rugby player turned CEO. He's incredibly funny. When you watch this episode, I guarantee you're going to love every minute. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming. We've actually been speaking a little bit off camera anyway, and you're very funny, actually.
Oh, thank you very much.
I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks for referring to me by my real name as well.
I was going to call you Geoff.
It's been a real step forward.
Do people always introduce you as Geoff?
They don't.
Oh.
They don't. Some Americans call me that, but other than that, it's a straight, simple Jeff.
I do like the spelling, though, and it makes you unique. You know, Sarah Blakely, who obviously founded Spanx, always says that, like, if you have a different name, it's like spelled differently or it's a bit more unique, or same with your brand. Obviously, if you just change like a letter, it makes you stand out.
I could add another O.
I think Geoff spelling for okay. Jeff is very different. I don't think we need to do that.
I feel really normal, but thanks for your feedback. Thanks for your feedback. I'll take it.
So you are a CEO. You have your own company called Built Visible, and you are also an ex-professional rugby player.
I am.
So let's start from like the beginning for anyone who kind of doesn't know, you know, your background. So you started in rugby and going down the sports route.
Yeah, so I went to uni and got a degree and was on that path, and I was playing part-time rugby while I was at uni and kind of had a decision to make about how seriously to take it. And I was like super, super lucky. So at the end of, I graduated in like 2008, so it's like a financial crisis, and there weren't many jobs knocking about, and it was just great timing, and I was playing okay rugby, and I got offered a full-time deal, like straight out of uni. So went down to Plymouth, played for a couple of years full-time in the English Championship, so like the second tier of English rugby. Things sort of fizzled out a little bit, but I had a good few years, and then sort of did a really slow, managed transition out of the game. Used rugby like in an amazing way, so that you can kind of earn money playing rugby, being part time, which takes all the financial pressure off, so you can do some, like, get a shit job or, like, you know, just find your way a little bit, which is super lucky. And then one thing led to another, and here we are today. I'm now an ex. I'm now a has been rugby player, but luckily a current CEO with Built Visible. So
it's interesting though, because in terms of like the sports side, I think obviously it probably happens more in football than, I guess, rugby. But I think every young man and woman kind of want to go into their professional side of sports. You know, as I was saying before, all my family all play rugby. So I don't really understand the football side. When people talk about football, I don't really know teams. But, you know, my family are diehard rugby players. You know, broken noses, cauliflower ears. It's pretty. Two ACLs and all that kind of jazz. And one of my brothers is now playing in Sydney, the same kind of thing that you did. But now he's got like a more professional job in a different sense. Do you think that kind of, not that it lets you down because you're obviously going for something so strong, do you think it made you stronger because you didn't hit maybe the league you wanted to get into?
I try and stay away from those kinds of things, because there's loads of, like, you know, like the internet is just people telling sob stories, right?
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh my God, I failed. And here's all the lessons. It's like, you know, it is what it is. And like, as an athlete, you're very used to, you know, you live or die on your performance, right? So like, if you're going to get picked the next week, if you're going to renew your contract, if you're going to move to a better club, all of that is like reliant on your performance. So I think athletes get good at understanding like their own level of performance and being very self-aware. Mm. So I think there are undoubtedly like loads and loads of benefits, and like and pretty much like so like to be grandiose, like call it a management philosophy,
mm.
is all born out of rugby in some way. So like both what I loved about the game and the way it's run and being a professional, but also all the things I absolutely hated and
yeah.
trying to build something really different to that. So it probably has made me stronger, but I think what I like about it is it's like really, really informed like how I do everything. And it
yeah.
really does drive all of that stuff. And it's, you know, like not everyone has that experience. So it's quite fun to be able to test like, you know, what yeah. works. It's not like the well-trodden path, right? So.
And I guess discipline too. You know, to be a CEO, you have to be disciplined in one way or another. And you don't build a business by just pure luck. You know, you really do have to put a lot into it. And do you think you've used the same mindset you used in sports as you've built your business?
I don't know how I was thinking when I was in sport, but I was just trying to like, you know, not be shit. But I think I think it has like...
Just about that tickle me so much. I'm trying not to be shit. Well, good.
Primary KPI, don't be shit. But no, I think what it has done is like, with the way that I run the business now is, like I said, if you own it, if you're the CEO, it's like, if it's good, it's you.
Yeah.
And if it's bad, it's you. Yeah. And I love that. I think that is like, that's the thing that most people don't really have, right? Because if you're like an employee or whatever, which is, you know, great, not wonderful, I'm not sort of dissing it, but like you can still fuck something up and it's not like the end of the world. Whereas if I make a catastrophic decision, I've then got to clean up all the consequences. But also if it's going really, really well, I'm like, well, isn't this great?
Wasn't that a great idea?
Yes. So I'm like, yeah, look at me. But I think I quite like that kind of accountability on it, you know, like it's very real, it's very raw, and you can't deny like the numbers around yeah. it, which is exactly like sport, basically.
So as you were kind of transitioning out of the sport side, obviously you've built a digital led agency, built Visible. Where did the idea come from? You know, obviously if you're going down the sports route, I guess if people don't know your background, it could have seemed like a really random sort of choice. What was the inspiration and how did you kind of begin?
So it kind of happened because rugby is quite boring. So being like a professional rugby player is like, it's the dream, right?
It was just not what I expected you to say.
No.
I told you he's funny.
I'm going somewhere with it.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm going somewhere with it.
I trust the process.
Yeah, yeah, please, just buy in. Everyone settle in. So when I was full-time, basically my whole career, I had loads of injuries. Right? Mm. And it like really did me in. But during those kind of injured periods is I was always really bored. And there's only so many coffees you can go for as a freshman athlete. Like I was in Plymouth, so you go to the beach or whatever. It's really unfulfilling because you kind of live for this thing. Then you can't do that thing at all. And so what else do you do? So I was doing loads of work. It was really fun. I was actually, the BBC got me to write a column for their sports section. Mm. And I was doing that. And then very egotistically, I was like, how can I make more people read my creative genius, right? And so I kind of got into... like building websites, social media, publicizing what I was doing, et cetera, et cetera. And then when I went part-time, became a part-time rugby player after that stint at Plymouth, and I went to an agency, and because I'd done all this stuff, they took me on because it was all digital stuff. And then that's what got me into digital. And I was just really, really interested in it. And then the way that's evolved is I went to a couple of agencies in London and I wanted to go somewhere really small that I could grow with.
Yeah.
And that's when I ended up at Built Visible and ended up buying the owner out in 2019, buying the founder out in 2019.
That's incredible, by the way.
Yeah, it's fun. It's great fun.
We have very different reactions to things.
It wasn't at all stressful. It was actually genuinely a great process to go through. But the thing about it is, when you look at what a digital marketing agency actually is, like any services business, it's just a people business. So all you're trying to do is you're just trying to galvanize a group of people to get behind a big idea, mm-hmm. to achieve something, to be part of something that's bigger than just themselves, and to kind of lay it out on the line for each other a little bit. And that is what a rugby team does. That's exactly the same thing. And so the way I kind of run the business is I'm not like your product expert. I'm not like, I don't know what my agency really does in terms of the technical detail. I've got amazing people that I empower and trust to do that. What I try and focus on is like how to build a really collaborative, cohesive team that's massively high performing, because that's a benefit to our clients. So that's kind of the thread of like how I got into it. I certainly got into the digital stuff, but for me now, it's more about like, how can we like go on great journeys with clients at a really big strategic level? I've got the experts that can do all the detail on that. So yeah, that's kind of the story, I guess.
It's really interesting. Obviously you spoke about, you know, kind of having your team that obviously you don't know the full ins and outs of, you know, the technical side of things. How important is the hiring process for you and how involved are you?
Massively important, and I'm not involved at all. So no, I've got, honestly, like, it's if you find the right people initially, right? So like, so the whole thing was, so I've got this mantra with one of our non-execs, and that the mantra is I and only I. And what he's trying to get me to do is just to think about what I'm doing every day. And I have to ask myself, am I and only I the person that can do the thing that I'm doing?
Yeah. Right?
And if the answer is no, then it has to be, okay, well, who can do it? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, then brilliant, keep doing it. But 9 times out of 10, the answer is no. The irony of that as well is that there's someone who you can give it to that's going to be better at it anyway.
Yeah.
Than you are. Like, if you drop the ego a minute, look around the room, you've already got great people. So outside of hiring like my direct team, I really am not involved.
Yeah.
Because I, if I hire the right people for me,
they hire
in my SLT and in the wider leadership team, they will hire great people. And it doesn't work all of the time. Like, we've made some errors over the years.
Oh, but, me too.
You know, but you have to kiss a few frogs, right? That's the that's the thing. But, you know, why we, like, you do it with the best intentions. You're not doing it to kind of settle. Mm-hmm. I think we kind of learn about, you know, really those character traits that we're looking for and like the kinds of people we want. And when we see that, it's like, we know that we can make people brilliant at the thing that we do as well. But yeah, like, fully trust the guys to do it. And it's just a massive thing. And it's a massive problem. Like, there's, finding great talent is a really hard thing to do.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Even, you know, now we're hiring and, you know, some great CVs, and we've met people before, and I'm sure you might have had a similar experience, where that CV is almost too good that you kind of know that somewhere that may not be true. Or we've hired people that we've really felt like they really fit and they, it just hasn't worked. And you're trying to think, where could I have hired better? But you couldn't really, because you, you know, until you've watched them do that job, how do you know how good they are?
Yeah. I think like so much of it is in like the characteristics and the behaviors.
And like, I get those wrong though. I'm awful. Yeah. I'm just...
Just hire lunatics and see where you end up then. That's how you could do it.
You have too many of me and the business crashes, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I actively try and avoid hiring people like me. That's important. But yeah, I think the... I think like some of it comes from like my career a little bit as well, in terms of like, I was never the most talented player. Like, obviously I didn't make it. So I can't.
You made it quite high though. I think you're putting it down.
Quite high. Quite high. Like, I really loved it and I enjoyed it. And that's now my metric of success, really. And, but during that time, I kind of built my career really, because I wasn't the most talented. I built it off kind of graft. I was quite a physical player, so I just looked after myself physically. Wasn't the most skillful, so I could never compete on that level, but I just worked really, really hard. And just, I was like, well, I'm just going to outwork people. I'm going to be fitter than them, stronger than them, more powerful. And that kind of translates a little bit into hiring, whereas it's like, if someone has the right attitude about what they're trying to do, because you can't get a degree in anything that we do, like, we're a content agency, an SEO agency, like, you can't go and really do that at uni, get a qualification. You have to learn it on the job. So find someone with the right application, aptitude, like, you know, all their attitude around how to do things, and you're probably onto a winner if you kind of empower them and tee them up for success. So that's the way I kind of look at it anyway.
And you said earlier, off camera, I believe, maybe, who knows?
Don't quote me.
You had about 70 staff now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a pretty big workforce.
Yeah, yeah. I was saying to the guys just before, like, there's definitely times when I miss being 20 to 30. And
and
I was like, why is that?
You're not the first person who said that to me. I think we've heard this maybe about 3 or 4 times, both of them nodding behind the scenes. And we had Sedge Beswick on.
I listened to that this morning.
Oh, did you? Did you enjoy?
I did, yeah.
Oh, thanks. But she spoke about how between that 20 and 30, it was probably the most fun, because you still know everyone, you kind of know what they love, you have a good time, and then the bigger you get, the more high pressure it becomes. And all of a sudden, you know, you're a big company, you need HR and you need legal teams that handle not just the business side of things, but the, you know, the company, like the personnel side, and it becomes that stress. Do you feel maybe that's similar?
Yeah, I think beyond that kind of size, it's like you cannot expose everyone to the purpose and the beliefs every day, all the time, right? And particularly now that we're like semi-remote and all that kind of stuff. it just dilutes and it just becomes a different challenge, really. But there are times I miss that kind of 20-30 festival for sure. And looking back, it's like that's kind of like the size of a rugby squad or like a match day squad. Like,
I love that it all comes back to rugby.
Everything always comes back. Everything comes back. But I'm just scared of what I don't know. No.
Now you've got two teams really competing.
Well, exactly.
Two rugby teams.
Yeah, yeah. But all the challenges now are just everything is alignment and everything is communication. Like they're the two things
that challenge the most.
Yeah, it will only ever come down because someone doesn't quite understand something, or you've allowed a little bit of interpretation, it's kind of run away. And even that is just communication. Like the number of times we talk about communication, and that's the only thing. But yeah, 70 people's a mad size. Everything's still annoying, basically.
It's definitely interesting because I'm obviously growing my company still. I think we're about to hit the 14, 15 mark in terms of employees. So I think
the best time.
Yeah, and it does feel great. And I think having people on, it's really made me feel grateful for like what we've got now. And it does scare me to grow. I think, do you remember that 20 to 30 size and the problems that maybe that you had then compared to now, all the problems being communication only?
I think honestly, like the vast majority of things come down to how something's communicated. I think the more people you add in is like the more room for interpretation, opinion, kind of how they take and run with it. I just think at that smaller size, it's like they all have exposure to the founder or the owner.
Yeah.
So they're all getting complete osmosis of that person's head, rightly or wrongly.
Mm.
And then, and as that grows, it's like you're kind of relying on other people to convey that message for you.
Yeah, and it's never really going to be you, is it? You know,
exactly. But equally, it's like if you find the right management team to do it. Like my biggest thing was finding the right management team. So like getting a COO in, that was pretty much the biggest thing, I guess. But like that, like she's amazing, and she's currently on mat leave, and I'm terrified.
You're sad.
I'm very sad. She's great.
Miss her.
Yeah, I know. She's got lovely little boys. So that's good.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. What well a brown. but yeah, she's. But like just there's key people of that way. You know, you go through and there's loads more. But you kind of make those key hires, and when people can like successfully articulate your vision, and then I think crucially execute it better than you can.
Yeah.
Because I'm terrible. The bigger it's got, the less detail I have. And like, so now I'm just like, yeah, let's sort of just just go over there. Let's just go over there, and yeah, it'll be all right. We'll see what happens. And I really need people to be like, okay, but specifically, here are the steps we're going to take, and like, how are we going to do it, and who are we getting on board to do it? And that's where like having that team is like really, really important. And yeah,
I think that's like the fun part though of like, you know, for example, obviously I've grown my company from like day dot, but now I'm stepping back a lot more. Like stepping back and allowing other people to kind of take over those jobs. And it is petrifying, but also you do feel like maybe you deserve to have that. Not every little bit has to be under you and, you know, the stress related. Did you feel the same as you took that big step back? Because obviously you bought the company and then became the CEO.
Yeah. Well, I was managing director and then I bought it and I just changed my job title.
This is actually a really funny story that's actually the same. So I was obviously the MD before and then promoted one of my staff to MD and became CEO. I told my dad, thinking absolutely over the moon for me, and he went, "We just promoted yourself, Hannah. It doesn't really mean much, does it?" I was like, "Cool."
Hey, that's the kind of clarity you need in your business.
I was like, great.
You should get him in. He could be COO.
I felt so humbled. How? Because my LinkedIn said I was doing amazing, but my dad said, "Well, you just promoted yourself, didn't you?" But, you know, it was now that point. And I do think there is a point where you do, I know they were saying you just changed your role, but there is a big difference between MD and CEO. Like MD, I was so much more involved, almost too involved to the point where I would go to sleep just thinking about the small details and I couldn't sleep. And I found that quite stressful because I wasn't willing to give up any of my responsibilities. I think it's a mindset.
But do you still do something now that you know full well you shouldn't be doing?
Yeah. Loads. This morning I did about 9 things I shouldn't have done this morning, but I still struggle with that.
Is that why you were late to the interview?
Well, that's my time to leave. No, I was late, but for clarity, well, there's nothing else to say.
don't worry about it. But yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it?
Well, he's held on to that one, hasn't he?
Yeah, never
you had a great chat with the boys. They kept you entertained.
I had a lovely time. I enjoyed it. But yeah, there's always things, and I think there's... I don't really look at like, I don't attribute any value to a title anyway. Like, I own the business.
So you're basically the same as my father, and you don't feel proud of me for
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
For you. And that's, you know, that's great.
But he plays rugby too, so he's a rugby coach. And
well, he's equally as miserable as I am then, probably.
Well, all the men in my family play rugby, but I do think your mindset's very similar to all of them. You know, it's very much, you know, get shit done. Don't feel sorry for yourself. It's very much, it is what it is.
I'm really bad at, like, recognising any kind of success. It's like, it's a thing. And we've just hired, and I've got a new managing director who's come in to sort of on COO's mat leave to kind of run the business a little bit, take us a different direction. And the other day, a COO was like, when she was briefing Maria in before she went away, she was like, just so you know, you'll get absolutely no feedback from Jeff about anything ever. But the thing is like, for me, that's like a good thing. Cause I think at a certain level, it's like, you know whether you're performing or not.
Yeah.
And you suffer or benefit. So
Sometimes feedback is a negative. If your version of praise is no feedback, to get feedback potentially is a negative.
Yeah, quite possibly. But I always just think if someone wants feedback, they can come and ask me, you know, like that whole, again, to bring it back to rugby, is like you play on a Saturday, Monday morning, you're in doing a video session, just analysing everything that you've done. So you're in a constant routine anyway of like assessing your own performance. So I think with that level is like, maybe it is a rugby thing, but there's that kind of, you're always trying to get better. You don't want to get carried away. We don't enjoy the wins enough. Don't enjoy the wins enough. And that's something that like my team are good at calling me out on, to be fair.
Like celebrating your small wins and your big wins.
Yeah, yeah. Like we're so bad at it. I'm always just like, what's next?
Every CEO I've ever met is exactly the same. And even I'm the same. Sometimes I look back and I watch other agencies. I don't know if you do this, where on LinkedIn or Instagram, whatever your playing ground online is, and you see kind of other people's wins, you think, oh, I remember that. And that was such a good time. And I can't believe like I didn't really give myself credit or give myself even like a little wine to celebrate or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's just something in like you're never the complete athlete. You've never built the perfect business. So like, and I just think, why get carried away with what you're doing? Like the best thing that happens, honestly, I don't know if I've ever said this to anyone, but like the COO who I was talking about, every year she'll send me like an email at the end of the year. And it's this like amazing thing of like, look what we've done. Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's like, it's banging and I love it. I don't even think I've told her this, that I love it so much. But like that's like the one time in the year where I'm like, yeah, actually, do you know what? But even then it's like, I don't think it's about like numbers or wins or achievements. Like all I care about is like, actually we've just had like such a good time. And like that's actually what's important to me. And like when I read it, it is never the numbers. It's always like, oh yeah, like there was that mad thing that happened or like we pulled that ridiculous thing off or like we were in that trench for ages and we managed to climb out. Like that's the stuff that I think's like the fun basically in running a business.
No, it's absolutely true. And it's really interesting that you mentioned about the trenches of, you know, since you've been MD, taken over, what do you reckon is the one pinnacle point where you thought, like, this is really difficult. I don't know if we're going to get out of it, if you're happy to answer that.
I honestly don't have anywhere I've been like, this is it.
Really?
Like, no, because it's all just like at one point there's like, it's just a logic problem. It's like money in, money out.
Yeah, it's all fixable. Yeah.
Everything is fixable and we're not packing parachutes. And like, I think there's loads of like, I'm very separate in terms of like the value of myself as a human being has absolutely nothing to do with the value of my work, because that would be mad. Because if every time you're having an amazing time, you'd just be like, oh, I'm a legend. I'm a stone cold legend. Like what could possibly go wrong? And then everything goes wrong and you're like,
oh, I'm a shit.
Just going to pop off that balcony. I'll see you later. And so like,
that is the conversation I have with people when things go wrong in that room. I go, right, I'm throwing myself off the balcony today.
It's good to put that on them.
your fault.
Yeah. But that's the thing is like, there's like so many people that tie their self-worth to outcomes they produce and it's got absolutely nothing to do with any outcomes you produce. So.
But I do think though, maybe that is because you are maybe a little bit older.
Thanks.
Let me finish my process of that. A lot of people now are starting businesses younger. You know, they're seeing that whole LinkedIn, that Instagram hype, that Stephen Bartlett effect, and people don't necessarily talk about the lows of running a business. So, and I think that's why you have that mindset, because I do know a lot of young founders who very much they don't say it. You don't need to say it, but you can hear them. And you think, you know, if everything fell apart tomorrow, would you have the same pride you have, or would you have still the same friends around you? I'm guaranteeing that you probably have the same friends you had since before you began the business.
Yeah.
And I do think that does come with age. You know, I started at 24, and at one point I did get really looped into that fake friend. Everyone thinks I'm great. And now I'm 29. I've got about 5 friends, and I keep myself very to myself, and I don't, you know, I think I'm great in some ways, but in other ways, I'm very much aware of my downfalls and why I'm a bit shit.
It's that self-awareness piece, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I transitioned out of rugby when I was 24.
Oh, wow. 24, so 25.
So yeah, I was just saying, like, yeah. That's like, so yeah, it's pure self-awareness. It's like the moment that you realize, like, running a business is basically just like a silly game that we all buy into because of capitalism. It's ultimately like, to get deep about it, it's like, it is a bit of a silly game.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then outside of that.
Yeah.
So you're like on holiday, you're chilled, you're having a nice time, you're with people you love. That's what it's about, not like these numbers and these spreadsheets that we, you know, try to keep busy with. So,
well, we love a spreadsheet.
So they are important. They are important. I take it back.
I do love a spreadsheet now. I think I've learned to love a spreadsheet because it figures out how much money we've made. So I'm like, show me the money. The
capitalism's got you. It's completely got you.
It's me. I'm the problem. It's me. In terms of your business, you know, one of your USPs is it is quite, you know, person to person. You are not ever going to be sat sort of like remotely in that sense. I know you're obviously now doing a bit more, and I guess because of COVID, everyone's having to kind of do a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Hybrid.
Hybrid. There you go. Yeah. A bit more hybrid working. How has that kind of affected things that you're doing? How important is it for you to kind of spend time with your team and be there? And obviously being a bit more client facing, I guess.
I think ideologically, I hate it. So
I love your answers. They're really just not what I ever expect. It's not really what I've had. Like, you know, usually we get very much like, oh, yeah, sort of, but you're very much like, nah, I hate it.
Well, ideologically, I hate it.
Ideologically.
But we have to do it.
Yeah.
So I think, so we were super lucky. So in the pandemic, like we had basically my stubbornness. Mm. I was like, I hate the idea of going remote. Mm-hmm. Don't want to do it.
Yeah, and I hate remote.
Again, my COO was like, stop chatting shit. We need to do it to be competitive. And so what we did is we, like, she basically got all like HR, IT, everything lined up to do a trial of being a remote company in February 2020. So when the pandemic came along, we had done everything already to complete coincidence to go remote. So that was like a real point of light. And I was like, that's why you shouldn't be stubborn, is because she's correct. But
women
then after
usually
that,
are.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to make that point, but you know, I only hire women anyway, so it's fine.
Oh, me too.
But yeah, so now it's like we do 2 days, and I think like everyone else, we've been trying to work it out, and we're just in the point now of like, we know what we want to do, and we've got a new office that's going to like actively like take control of the situation rather than just keep going, oh, well, now we have to because everyone else does. So I just think you can't replace that osmosis. Like, I'm such a team person. Like you can't build like psychological safety in a team. You can't be vulnerable with people over Zoom. You can't like actually understand the people you're working with unless you're face to face. And that is just, and it's so interesting. We've seen such a swing where people are like, I'm not going to join you unless you're fully remote, to I'm sick of being fully remote. I need to come to an office. And it's mad how, and so it'll even out. And like, obviously we're in a new world now, but I still, you know, I don't like it, but equally I love just spending a day in my little garden room in my village, you know, just pottering away doing my work, and everyone can leave me alone and I hate them. So that's that. Like, it's got an upside, you know?
Yeah, I actually think for me, I am so aware that now people don't have to come into the office. I know how important it is for people to come in. Same way of like, you know, you're saying about, you know, you can't see that emotion. When people are stressed, people will hide their feelings at home.
Yeah.
Because they don't want you to feel their burden or stress. Everyone works differently. It's also getting to know people and how they work. You know, I get stressed, and it's nice that I think people know when I am stressed, because I won't actively ask them to take things off me. I kind of need them to push it upon myself. Mm. But we actually have an incentive. We pay people £100 towards their travel a month to bring them in, because I am aware that they don't have to. And I expect my staff here 4 days a week.
Nice.
I give them the one day at home. you know, and I actually dread those days because I can't see my house as the place I work. It's like my sanctuary. Yeah. And when I'm working there, I just think, well, actually, I sit at home in bed, don't put makeup on, don't even get up. And I just know that it's just a filthy way to live. So why am I doing that to myself?
Yeah.
Filth.
It's a thing though, isn't it? I'm exactly the same, except I always put makeup on. But no, I think the thing about like the whole coming into the office thing is like we found it really hard in terms of people just lost all sense of context about what mattered. And so what would happen is like boundaries just evaporated. So at Bevisible, we actually embed clinical psychologists in our team. So we work with clinical psychologists, not just like a Headspace app, or whatever. It's like actual doctors to help maximize people's performance. So like say someone's a bit anxious about presenting or something like that. It's like we can help them medically, clinically to overcome that and to work on themselves.
Is that quite unique in your space?
Yeah, no one else is doing it and it's madness. I don't know why they're not. And like, honestly, everyone should do it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's got such a great benefit for the company. And it just shows you're taking it seriously and you're not fobbing them off with like mindfulness or whatever, which, yeah. So, but the boundaries were evaporating because people would, so say they like have a client call at home in their kitchen and the client's like having a bad day. They're in their kitchen at home. They're annoyed about something or like we fucked something, whatever. Client's annoyed, bit of a bad call. They put the phone down. They're just in their kitchen. Yeah. And then like the bad thing is just in their own house rather than, oh, actually I had 45 minutes of my commute where I separated out work from home. And that caused so many issues for us. Like the sick days we had went through the roof. It was ridiculous.
Really?
It's completely ridiculous. It cost us money. So like it restricts our ability to grow the business or reward people because they were getting ill because the boundaries had evaporated. So that's why coming in is so important because even if it's 2 days, we do 2 days mandatory. At the moment, we'll do things like structure client calls in the office so that that debrief can happen. Like say, cause you have great calls, you have bad calls. It's just, that's what agency life is. It's a bit of a roller coaster. That's where all the fun is. So
it's fun. I get anxiety if I know it's a bad call. I'm like this, breathe through it. 9 vapes later, finally get on the call.
We could just deploy vapes. That's probably fine. Actually, that's a good idea. Cheapen that 100 quid a week shit.
Deploy the vapes.
Just if you're really bad, we'll get the Marlboro Reds out. But, you know, is that okay? It's probably fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Why not?
2023, do what you want.
2023 is about vaping, you know.
I didn't know that.
2024 is when the vapes get barred and we find out everyone's dying.
Back to Marlboro Reds.
Yeah, exactly.
Love a Marlboro Red.
Outside the agency, you run Tackling Transition, which also helps other athletes kind of transition the same way that you did to run your business. Why was that so important for you to begin this?
Just because I think, the background of it is my sister's a clinical psychologist. So, and we were talking loads about like my transition out of the game and like various things happened where like, you know, there's been lots of really sad stories about people, you know, really falling to pieces when they transition out. And my sister's done a lot of work in the military and they're all the same clinical principles. And I said, like, why don't we just like build something, digitize it, get it in a format that's accessible? Because in any kind of athletic pursuit, in professional sport, rugby, athletics, football, whatever it is, there's basically no incentive for the administration or the club to look after someone's career after they're with the club, right? Because they're there to maximize the performance. The irony of all of it is that a more rounded individual will perform better on the pitch.
Yeah.
So if they actually have something outside of their sport, they will be better anyway. But they're not incentivized to do it, so they don't do it. And at the same time, like, what do you even Google? Like, you know, if your career ends suddenly, where do you go? Like, how do you even, but it is on you. So we wanted to make something really empowering and really accessible. So we created this course basically with like the 7 things that will happen to you when you are transitioning out of sport. The reality is it's like any kind of major thing. So it could be the military or exiting founders.
Like depression and stuff like that.
Sorry?
It's like depression is like things to expect, I guess.
It's basically the modules are around things like the inevitability of retirement. So like no one plays sport forever. So how do you deal with that? So that's like denial and things like that. Loss, so
it's like
grieving.
Grief, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's like grieving.
Grief's a whole module, like how you, the structure of your life and what you do. The community aspect. So for me, the big thing's community. But that's the only thing that I've really held on to is like I just miss the boys. Like that's the thing.
Oh, that's really nice.
It's okay. It's not that sad. but that's the only thing where like I will go out of my way to like meet up with like guys I played with and like we have reunions and stuff.
That's nice.
Yeah. And so the idea was to kind of lay everything out for someone and just say, look, this is what's going to happen to you in a greater or lesser degree. And there's a load of stuff where I'm talking to my sister about it. And then she does like guided exercises for it. And it was all on the belief that like, if you're an ex-athlete, you've got so much to give, like you're super goal orientated, you're super motivated, you're super resilient. It's exciting and different. Like people love talking about, like I wasn't even that good a rugby player. People talk to me all the time about, oh my God, you play rugby for a living. They just find it exciting. Like it's, you know.
It's different, isn't it?
It's different, exactly. And it's the thing that a lot of people don't do. And so they've got all this stuff to bring to organizations and they've got natural leadership capability. The list just goes on. There's lots of cliched things that athletes bring. And so all it was kind of, I just want to help them like increase their self-awareness and be like, well, actually, I can get going with this at any point. I don't have to have been retired. I don't have to be 18 in the middle of my career. Like you could be at any stage on that journey. And the course is designed to kind of help people build that self-awareness about themselves and like bring something to life after sport. Because sport's unique. You get to retire twice, right? Like that's, I've already retired once. I'm 37. Mm. So that's quite a unique thing. And it's just helping me empower people to do that in the best possible way. And
because it is quite young when athletes do retire young.
Yeah, I stopped playing at 32. And that was after like 7 years of just playing part-time. Yeah. So, you know, the worst case scenario is you get a young kid who's like teed up for life and kind of like, you know, going to make it. He's playing like premiership football or rugby or whatever, destined for the stars. And then he blows his knee. The next day, someone's like, yeah, that's you done. And it's, well, how do you recover from that? Like that's a huge thing. And who's going to look after them? Because the club that was paying their wages now can't use them.
So and they don't help at any point within that, even their
people
recovering.
Are getting better. Like it is getting better, but it all is still quite token. So like those sporting bodies and administrators, they're doing stuff, but like, I don't think they know enough themselves to like really add the value. So it's like a real passion project because there's just all this potential locked up in these amazing people that have achieved great things and kind of, they're all set to sort of climb the second mountain as it were. So yeah, we're just trying to help.
Within your business, do you hire ex-athletes knowing that what their mindset brings to the table?
We don't actively go after ex-athletes.
No.
Complicated from a DEI standpoint in terms of like anonymization. But the attributes and the things that we look for that would accompany an athlete, like 100%, that it's that kind of, are they resilient? Are they goal motivated? Like, do they realize that they are better off being part of something bigger than themselves? They're all things you find in athletes. So like we test for the same things. We have our kind of career architect, our development framework that we have for the agency, like really looks at those behaviors and characteristics. And it's all inspired directly by sport. So I'm sure that will end up with some ex-athletes and stuff.
It's really, really interesting because obviously your agency is so data driven. And then at the same time, you have this like sports mentality, like the USP of your agency is so clear that separates you. Are you proud of what you're kind of achieving in that
We can
sense.
Never celebrate success. We've been through this. We can't be proud.
So I think we should do it now. Should we just do a little cheers?
All right, we'll do a little
cheers. Cheers to your success. There
cheers.
You go.
Cheers. I'll joke to that. But I think like, when you look at what I love is like people achieving things that are a result of working together and being a team. I'm just under no illusions. Like I am not the CEO that's like single-handedly doing all the stuff. It's like, it's ridiculous to think that. Like,
I don't think anyone is.
Nothing.
Though.
I think some people have a bit of ego.
I mean, in terms of they might say it, but they're not the ones doing it all. You know, you are nothing without your team.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is like, I would far rather be vocal about the team than I would myself, which is why I struggle doing things like podcasts and stuff like that.
I think you've done very well today.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, it's probably getting edited out, but we did have a fit of laughs for about 5 minutes. It was very, very enjoyable, actually. But no, good. I think, you know, it is. I think the whole point of when, you know, a CEO or a founder or anyone who's high up in a business does podcasts, it's because you're very much shedding light on your experience. There are so many young people or even like people who are a bit older who really are struggling to figure out what's right for them, what's wrong, if they're taking the right path. And, you know, sometimes they transition from one career to another. We meet so many people who are like, gone from one side of things, they go brand side to agency side, which is talent. It sounds really similar. It's so different because it's so much more demanding on the talent side because it's people, you know. And I think that's why listening to your story is really lovely, because you can transition at any age and do whatever. I think everyone thinks you have to make it by 30 or you're done.
But then what are they defining making it by, you know?
I know. I think it's more to do with, that's what I'm saying. It's all to do with social media effect of what people define success is. How impressive is your car? How impressive is your house? Have you made 4% of 30? Or, you know, everyone's success is different in terms of levels. And I think when I was younger, my level of success was like how amazing I could be. And now I'm just like, being happy feels pretty good.
Yeah, because do you love your job?
I love my job.
Well, there we are.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. No. That's the game. That's the game. And it like doesn't matter. Like that just takes all hierarchy and success and it's all nonsense in comparison. So I'm always like, well, do I love it? And like we were just talking before off camera about like...
When I wasn't here.
When you weren't here because you were late. Well. Yeah, just to call that back out again.
Just dig it back out,
But yeah, we were talking before and being like the size of the company and all this. And it's like, yeah, like it's all really annoying. Like it is annoying if you look at it through that lens. But like the reality is, it's just like, yeah, but that's it's hard. And if it's hard, it's like really engaging. And if it's really engaging, then you're always like challenged and enjoying. And so that's what it comes down to for me. It's not like title or money or like headcount. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like
your personal life, how has that been affected by running a business of your size?
Yeah. So I was married.
Oh, yeah. We're there.
Yeah. There we are. Here we go. But that's the thing. Like that's, massively out of balance. Mm. Like just lost all. But I was trying to play semi-professional rugby at the same time.
Yeah.
So I tried.
Oh, okay. So you were doing three different jobs. Being a husband, doing semi-professional rugby and the business side.
Two jobs, yeah.
Well, that's three, no?
Yeah, exactly. That was one I wasn't doing. Oh, so this is the thing.
Oh, I didn't even cook that.
So I think it's like, it's... I've had to learn that the hard way. And that's that whole like I and only I thing, right? It's like the I and only I, if I had looked at it, everything through that lens, then in any traditional marriage, then it should only be me.
Yeah. It's
the husband, right? But in the business was like, I was just doing way too many things and I was playing rugby. So like, I just lost that balance. I didn't hire someone in quickly enough to do the thing I was doing before.
Yeah.
Build the team out properly. And so...
It's so, hard lessons though.
Yeah, but like now it's like that is baked in. In terms of like my ability to separate like my job from my actual life. And then so now, I've moved out of London, live in a little village.
That's nice.
Very happy. I've got a little 9-month old called River.
Congratulations. Who's
a little dickhead, but he's very nice.
I love you. You're so good.
But he, and so that's the thing is like I can now, I've got this whole thing I'll tell people about where it's like when I pull up on the drive, I can hear this gravel. The gravel is way too thick and it makes this lovely noise, right? And I just park the car and I'm like,
Turn off.
Literally, it's like a switch. And so, that's the whole thing about working from home. I don't really like.
If you don't learn those lessons, you can't ever be a better version of yourself at any point.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think that's quite nice. I think me a few years ago was a bit of a dickhead. And I think I've really become the woman I was meant to be. And I don't know if I would have become that person had I not gone through the real highs and the real lows, because they're humbling.
Was there a time when you didn't think that you were making it up?
Making what up?
Like the game of life. Like, because that's like, I think loads of people, like the success goes to their head.
Oh, I think,
Did you think you're like, well, I fucking made it? Because I think that's what makes people idiots.
Made it about 3 years ago. And looking at it back now, I'm like, oh. You literally made nothing. But I had my little flat. I thought I was like winning. I had a little smart car with this. But I was just happy being happy. And everyone wanted to be my friend. Everyone wanted to be my friend. Like people who were horrible to me at school. And I was like, oh my God, I'm fucking sick. But now it's like my what I judge my level of success on is completely different. It's like, am I happy? Do I go to bed and not worry about things at night? You know, are my team happy? Have I created a nice, loving environment for people to work in and want to work here? They're just different levels. And, you know, watching my talent achieve their dreams of things that I know I wouldn't have been able to do for them 3-4 years ago, I think that's where my level of success comes in.
Yeah. And then all the other traditional societal metrics of success, like follow that, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're doing all that well, you'll be raking it in. So
Well, yeah. I actually have always said this, even when I was not doing well. It's like, it's almost someone who is successful is obviously doing well financially. It's almost a privilege for them to say all these things are going well, because when you're a startup, you know, nothing goes well and it's hard and you're fighting tooth and nail. So the things that, you know, I used to listen to other entrepreneurs talk about, I'm like, that's a privilege though, because you've made it now because you've put those years of hard work in. So talk about those when you were struggling, you know, yeah. And the fact that you do have these different levels of, if your ego takes a battering as well, like one minute it's here and then it's here, and then you get older and you realize actually it's very much here. Just leave it there.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be anywhere else. But anyway, I'm going to wrap it up with our last question. If there was one part of your life that you'd manage differently, which part would it be?
It's a big question. I'm very happy. Like, I think one thing I think I should do more of is exercise. Like, I look like a bag of milk. I've dropped off the exercise train big time. So that's the only thing, is like more space for that. But the problem, the point is like, I filled that with like other things, like
other
spending
happiness.
Time with my kid,
yeah,
and like playing golf important. And like doing those things I like to do. So
golf is exercise.
Sorry?
Golf is exercise.
It definitely doesn't count because you have 5 beers.
Oh, I'm so glad. Can we actually have that as a clip? Because a few people who should hear that.
Golf is not exercise. It's beers. It's a lead up to beers. It's a long walk before some beers.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've had a really good time.
Yeah, it's been great. I've loved it. Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for watching this episode of Managed. If you loved watching, please make sure you're following us so you can receive updates on our next episode. I'll see you next week. No, but like, I feel like you're very funny because you're dry. Like, you've got a dry humor.
Thank you.
Not as dry as a person, just dry humor. Why are you not? Stop, because you're making
me. I think it's
me.
The aircon, but we need to keep it on because the gingers are suffering at the moment. So, like.
No, stop.
My people are in trouble. We need to keep that
the
shit
gingers,
on.
The gingers, did you say?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like there's a few of us knocking about his closet, Ginger as well. I can see that.
Luke, sorry, can I have some order in the room?
My brother.
Can you explain a little bit more about what this is and why you started it? Like, what?